Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the North Korea's failure to launch a missile in conjunction with the Day of the Sun celebrations commemorating the birth of Kim Il-sung. We will look into speculation that the U.S. has a covert program to sabotage North Korea's missile and nuclear program and speak with John Pike, one of the world's leading experts on defense, space, and intelligence policy. He is the director of GlobalSecurity.org and previously worked for more than two decades with the Federation of American Scientists, where he directed the Space Policy, Military Analysis, Nuclear Resource, and Intelligence Resource projects. He joins us to discuss whether the U.S. has managed to insert a kind of Stuxnet malware into the North Korean missile and nuclear program, or if Kim Jong-un is simply pushing the envelope too hard in a rush to get a long-range missile that could deliver a nuclear warhead to the continental United States. Then we'll get an analysis of an apparent shift underway in the White House, with the adults in the room beginning to take over as Donald Trump seems to have recognized the need to govern and that ideologues like Stephen Bannon offer little in that regard beyond heated rhetoric. Andrew Nathan, a professor of political science at Columbia University and the author of China's Transition, the Tiananmen Papers, joins us to discuss the Trump administration's tilt towards China and whether that means Trump has given up on working with Putin and has reneged on whatever covert deal they might have had. Then finally, we'll get an update on the referendum in Turkey, where from early returns, it appears the Turks have narrowly voted away democracy in favor of dictatorship. Henri Baki, the director of the Middle East program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, who served as a member of the State Department's policy planning staff, joins us to discuss President Erdogan's new powers that will enable his megalomaniacal vision of himself as Turkey's new sultan, who can now rule until 2029. And joining us now is John Pike, one of the world's leading experts on defense, space, and intelligence policy. He's the director of GlobalSecurity.org, which is focused on innovative approaches to the emerging security challenges of the new millennium. He previously worked for nearly two decades with the Federation of American Scientists, where he directed the Space Policy, Cyber Strategy, Military Analysis, Nuclear Resource, and Intelligence Resource projects. He has also been at the forefront of utilizing satellite imagery to monitor worldwide weapons facilities. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Pike.
I'm honored to be here.
Well, thank you, John. And
You've got quite a lineup today.
It's
the one program.
I know. It's every day. It's the daily diet of doom. What can I say? But we do have, speaking of doom, Jen McMaster, the new national security advisor on the Fox News this morning, said that the U.S.'s problem with North Korea, this is a problem that is coming to a head. There was a lot of anticipation of a nuclear test and a missile test, and the sense that maybe, as Donald Trump had warned, that we're going to deal with this problem if China doesn't, that something big might happen. So that's led some people to assume that this fizzled missile test might well have been sabotaged by the U.S. Do you buy that?
No, I don't. I think the North Koreans are perfectly capable of blowing up their own rockets on their own without any help from the United States. The problem that North Koreans have right now is they have a very ambitious strategic modernization program, both of nuclear weapons and various delivery systems. And I think they've bet on a lot of different programs, some of which look like they're going to work out, and others, those dogs just won't hunt. And I think we're seeing here one of the liquid-fueled programs that has been notoriously unsuccessful over the last couple of years.
So do you think they're just firing off this old inventory of liquid fuel because they've replaced them with the more reliable and ready for launch solid-fuel missiles?
I think that's exactly it. Of course, we don't know what they're doing over there, but the singularly unsuccessful test program they've had with their liquid propellant missiles suggests to me that they've got a warehouse full of them. They might as well shoot them off. If one of them works, great, and if it fails, not. But these are consistently blowing up shortly after launch, whereas they have a solid propellant program that works reasonably well. And with the newly reinforced operating relationship with Iran, which had just been focused on the solid propellant missiles, I think North Korea is shifting in that direction as well. And so I think they're moving away from liquid propellant and towards solid propellant.
And apparently this was, at least initially, the U.S. intelligence analysis is that this was a medium-range missile. So
that's right.
The concern is, of course, that they could get a missile with a range sufficient to deliver a nuclear warhead on the continental United States.
Well, they've had that missile for several years. And the question has simply been whether they could put a warhead on it. My own assessment is they've been able to put a warhead on it for several years. So the idea that somehow or another there is a future threat that Donald Trump is going to have to prevent, I think, is a fantasy. That threat is already here, and I don't think we can do very much about it.
And again, I'm speaking with John Pike, who's one of the world's leading experts on defense, space, and intelligence policy. He's the director of GlobalSecurity.org, which is focused on innovative approaches to the emerging security challenges of the new millennium. And he previously worked for nearly two decades with the Federation of American Scientists, where he directed the space policy, cyber strategy, military analysis, nuclear resource, and intelligence resource projects. He's also been at the forefront of utilizing satellite imagery to monitor worldwide weapons facilities. So then, what did you make of the parade on Saturday's Day of the Sun celebrations with these long...
All these new rockets?
Yeah, the drive-by. So
during the Cold War, when the Soviets pulled that stunt, we called it rattling your rockets.
Uh-huh.
The Soviets would drag a lot of rockets through Red Square back in the 1960s. And half of them turned out to be fake in one way or another. And I think in the case of North Korea, we're seeing a number of fake rockets to keep us confused. Some of them may be real. Some of them may turn out to be real down the road. But I think that there was a fair amount of disinformation in that parade yesterday.
Well, of course, the Soviets' Red Square parades, they would also not only have, you know, fake missiles, but they'd also fly over these squadrons of bombers, which would then do a big slow
circle
turn
around Moscow and fly over again.
Right, and they just kept coming all day, right.
It created a bomber gap, you know.
Right, right. So when you say that you think this is the idea that they could drop a nuclear warhead on the United States has already happened or is happening, and we have to get used to
it. We've been there for years, right. Several years.
Well, of course, there's always the option of coming over and taking one over in a trawler or something. I mean, there is, by and large, a greater concern about
clandestine introduction. That's certainly one option as well.
Right. So, what is? I actually interviewed on Thursday Donald Gregg, a former CIA officer who was a U.S. ambassador to South Korea, and he was George H.W. Bush's national security advisor.
Uh-huh.
He knows the North Koreans. He deals with them a lot and thinks we should be talking to them and not scaring them or trying to bluff them, because they don't bluff easy. And it's kind of a, you know, senseless posturing. So do you think that I don't see that idea of negotiation anywhere on the table. So what do you think is happening now? I started out by mentioning General McMaster's comments today on Fox News. It seems like the U.S. is pushing the envelope, upping the ante in terms of rhetoric, as opposed to coming to some kind of understanding that the Chinese can't make these people do what you want them to do. At the end of the day,
we're going to huff and puff and blow their house down.
Right, or you know, until we figure out that one of these days we're just going to have to talk directly to these people.
I think the problem is there's really nothing to talk about. The international community's position is that once the United States pulled its nuclear weapons out of South Korea, once South Korea agreed not to develop nuclear weapons, that North Korea should uphold its part of the bargain and get rid of their nuclear weapons. Well, the North Koreans have changed their mind. They think that their nuclear weapons protect them from the United States and other people in the neighborhood, and they're not going to give them up. There's no way they're going to give them up. It's not going to happen. The Obama administration's position, they call strategic patience, basically to wait them out. And I wasn't a big fan of Mr. Obama's foreign policy in other areas, but I think in that direction, they hit the nail on the head. There's just nothing to talk about. But the idea that we're going to bluff them or pressure them, I think is just going to get us into trouble. We should ignore them.
But on the other hand, my sense is that if you were to make a deal with the North Koreans, in other words, have direct negotiations, you know, technically the Korean War is still
still at war
because the armistice was never complete, or the end of hostilities was never completed.
Right.
If you were to have an agreement that ended the hostilities, wouldn't the Kim regime collapse shortly thereafter? Because one of the glue.
Well, I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, the glue. Absolutely. is their paranoia about the Americans are out to get you.
Yes, and they've got their population whipped up into this war fever that's been going on for six decades now. And I've thought for some time that if we simply walked into the truth village at Panmunjom and threw a peace treaty on the table and said, the war is over, bye, that the North would implode, or certainly would have a controlled collapse of some direction. So that would be, I think you're onto it exactly. We need to give them a peace treaty.
So back to this notion that there's some covert U.S. Ability to sabotage North Korea's nuclear program and missile program. Uh-huh. There have been a lot of hints in that direction, and some people interpreted Donald Trump's kind of confidence that we're going to take care of this problem meant that he had something up his sleeve. Uh-huh. You don't buy that, I take it.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think that the North Koreans are perfectly capable of messing up their hardware on their own, and particularly over the last couple of years when Iran has relocated so much of its activities to North Korea. I think the North Korean program managers have been under a lot of pressure with this new Iranian competition to come up with something that works, and they've just been trying too hard, and the result is launch failures, like we've seen today.
So what contribution are the Iranians making to the North Korean missile program? I don't imagine. Maybe they are with the nuclear. I don't know. But
Well, they are with the nuclear as well, because North Korea and Iran have been cooperating on their nuclear programs and on their missile programs since the 1990s. And the North Korean program has just gone on like gangbusters over the last couple of years. And I think that's because the Iranians are helping them both with the nuclear program, the enrichment program, and with their missile program, because the Iranians have been concentrating on solid propellant missiles. The North Koreans have been doing both, and now we're seeing a changed emphasis in North Korea towards solid propellant programs, which seem to work. The liquid propellant programs they've been working on don't seem to be doing so well.
So what about the idea that there's some sort of Stuxnet type malware that's been inserted into the North Korean programs, just as it's alleged that the U.S. and Israel...
It was done in Iran, that's
yeah,
right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I was skeptical of that initial report on Stuxnet sabotaging Iran's nuclear enrichment program. It was very thinly sourced. There was basically one guy claimed it. I've heard no credible suggestion that they're doing anything like that here. But if I wanted to get the North Korean leadership trying to track down saboteurs and spending more time searching for Trotskyite wreckers than actually trying to build the program, I would suggest to them that there was sabotage going on, because the search for sabotage wrecked the Soviet Army before the Great Patriotic War, and I think that sort of disinformation campaign that would be the way I would try to wreck their program rather than some malware stunt.
So then you're suggesting that, because it was General Cartwright who first leaked that public information about Stuxnet, and he I think he actually did some jail time and then
a few months.
Yeah, and Obama.
And there was no other source for the program. There's
right.
No other source for that story.
And Obama pardoned him. So,
yes.
So you think that you don't think there's anything to the idea that somehow.
Well, I don't know, obviously.
Yeah. Right.
But the provenance of that story suggested to me that it might have been disinformation. You only have one source. They convicted him to make him look credible, and then he gets pardoned so he doesn't have to suffer too much for playing along with the scam and taking one for the team. Is that true? I don't know. But it's not a deeply sourced story, and that makes me a little bit skeptical. And certainly in the case of North Korea, it's going to be far easier to suggest to them they've got saboteurs because they're quite paranoid, you know, as opposed to actually trying to get software into one of their rockets. Maybe we are doing that, but I think that jacking up the paranoia in the North would probably be a lot easier to do.
So what then are we to make of Vice President Pence's trip to South Korea? Do you think that this is going to sort of calm down? I mean, the one thing that I mentioned to Ambassador Gregg last Thursday when I spoke to him was about the many options that General McMaster said that that Trump had asked for and that he's
That's
given
right.
him. One of the options was nuclear decapitation or a decapitation scenario. And certainly that kind of annoyed Donald Gregg. He thought that was something that shouldn't be discussed. Had you heard anything about that?
Oh, yeah. These plans have been around for 20 years. I mean, the Bush administration thought that blowing up Iraq was going to be easy, so they came up with plans for blowing up North Korea. But then when Iraq turned out to be not so easy, they lost interest in blowing up North Korea. But those plans have been around for two decades now. Op Plan 5030, 5015, and I think that the Pentagon has just dusted off those plans and briefed them to Donald Trump. I don't think they're going to actually do anything with them.
Right, but if you were to somehow target at Kim Jong-un, what's the what possible guarantees are that his military leaders won't press the button and retaliate?
Well, it's a problem. It's
right.
a problem. You know, I think that the North wants nuclear weapons so that we won't blow them up. We should avoid blowing them up precisely because they have nuclear weapons. They're very dangerous, and we need to think about down the road possibly some sort of controlled transition in which the South goes north and the Americans exit so that the Chinese don't freak out about having American troops on the Yalu River. But I think we need to be thinking more about those managed transitions than lobbing a nuke into Pyongyang just to see what might happen.
Well, just in closing, what is Vice President Pence doing then? Is he just sort of trying to either continue ramping up the paranoia or... Because you have to imagine that the South Koreans are not too thrilled with the possibility that their capital could be incinerated.
Well, I think they're not terribly thrilled. I mean, social media over there seems to be pretty riled up about it. I'm sure that the Russians have been jacking up their social media to get them even more riled up about it, and maybe the Chinese too. But I think he's over there to take their temperature to see what they have to say.
Well, John Park, I thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You too. And again, I've been speaking with John Pike, who's one of the world's leading experts on defense, space, and intelligence policy. He's the director of the globalsecurity.org, which is focused on innovative approaches to the emerging security challenges of the new millennium. And he previously worked for nearly two decades with the Federation of American Scientists, where he directed the space policy, cyber strategy, military analysis, nuclear resource, and intelligence resource projects. He's also been at the forefront of utilizing satellite imagery to monitor worldwide weapons facilities. series. We're going to take a brief station break and back getting an analysis of an apparent shift underway in the White House with not just putting the adults in charge, but perhaps a tilt in favor of China.